Well, good morning, church. Good morning. Those of you in the back didn't know, I said it earlier. Man, it is good to be with you this morning. It has been a great morning of worship. I think that's the only time I ever used the word mightst in that particular song, that thou mightst live. I don't think I used that at any other conversations or any other points in life. David did a good job with announcements this morning, but he missed something pretty important. David and Linda are new grandparents again. Lila Violet was born on the 28th. Her name means hope in the night. It's just a really beautiful name. John and Jenna had a beautiful baby girl. She is adorable, and we are so thankful that she doesn't look like David. Anyway, he missed that one. I don't know why. I like the name Lila Violet. I think that's just really neat to have a name that sort of means something. You all know what an apprentice is, right? Does everybody know what an apprentice is? Raise your hand if you do know what an apprentice is. Okay. How many of you remember the TV show The Apprentice? And now just the old people raise their hands. Good. The Apprentice was a reality TV show, and the premise was that you had these 16 bright young candidates from, they had all walks of life. Some of them had MBAs and doctorates, and some of them had their own businesses. But each week they would be given these assignments, and these assignments were designed to test their intelligence and their skills and their nerve and their street smarts. And it could be really hard assignments, could be really simple assignments, just to see how much they'd hustle, how much they'd do. What people tuned in to watch, however, was not the assignments. What people tuned in to watch was how these bright young people would trip over each other and lie and scheme and cheat with one another just to make it to the top. Like, what were you willing to do to make it to the top? And it was kind of a no-holds-barred approach, all in an effort to outshine the other, because at the end of every week, one person out of this crew of 16 was going to get fired or going to, not win the show, going to be eliminated. So for the contestants, their whole goal each week was to keep not losing. And then eventually, if they were the last one standing, they got like $250,000, and they got an apprenticeship with the Trump Organization, and it was a really big deal, right? That's what you really wanted to win, was this money and this opportunity. Now, sometimes in Christianity, we use words like mightst and hast, and some other words that we don't use in any other parts of life. Like, no other place out in the world are you going to have a conversation where these words might come up. And so outside of the church, these words are kind of unfamiliar. Words that we might have, therefore, a difficult time specifically defining. Like, if I told you, the word righteousness, give me a really good definition of righteousness. Right, that's a tough word to put a specific designation on. And so it's kind of hard for us to wrap our minds around it. So this morning, I want us to think about the word discipleship as being something like an apprenticeship. Now, to be sure, there are some significant differences, and we're going to talk about those differences a little bit later. But in some ways, they are really similar, discipleship and apprenticeship. Because I want us to think about what it means this morning to be a disciple or an apprentice of Jesus. Now, if you've been a Christian for some time, I'm willing to bet that you have heard a lesson on discipleship before, and it's one of those you can really tune out, but I don't think you've heard this one before. So even if you've been a Christian for a long time, it's really important that we get a good understanding of what a disciple actually even is. Now, in the New Testament, they use this Greek word, and the Greek word is mathetes. And you don't need to know this word, but I just thought it looked cool. And the Greek word mathetes is always translated disciple. This specific word occurs only in the Gospels and Acts. It occurs some like 280 times in the Gospels and another 30 or so times in the book of Acts. And it's used to describe, every time, this word is used to describe the men and the women who attached themselves to Jesus as their master. And in the early Christian usage, even beyond the New Testament, we know from what we learned that in history that Mathetes was a common term that Christians used to describe themselves. And even people who weren't Christians might use that word to describe them. It meant for those who were alive during Jesus' lifetime that you went with Jesus everywhere he went, right? If you were a disciple of Jesus, and of course we know about the apostles, but even beyond the apostles, beyond the 12, there were other people who were disciples of Jesus. They went where Jesus went. They did what Jesus did. They listened to what Jesus said, literally following Jesus around. If he's teaching out in the countryside, you go out to the countryside. If he's teaching in Jerusalem, you go to Jerusalem. Whatever Jesus is doing, wherever Jesus is going, you went with him. You were just learning how to do life. And if you wanted to be Jesus' disciple, his apprentice, there were some essential conditions that you had to meet. But number one, you had to spend time with him. Like if you want to be a disciple of Jesus, you can't just be in some village in Samaria and say, hey, I heard about Jesus. I'm a disciple of Jesus. If you wanted to be a disciple of Jesus, you got to go be with Jesus. Go walk around with Jesus. Go listen to Jesus. You cannot do discipleship via Zoom. You cannot do discipleship at arm's length, at a distance. You had to be there. You had to be with him. There was no distance learning discipleship program. So like in Matthew chapter 16, Jesus says this. He says, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will find it. Right? Just go be with Jesus, literally following after him. Follow me. Go where I go. Do what I do. Now, most Christians, we don't think of our Christianity in this apprenticeship style terms. I remember when we lived in Nashville, we had this amazing plumber. The guy was actually a former pipe fitter, and he worked up and he'd just done all this great stuff. You had any plumbing problem, and this guy could come in and fix it. He was the best plumber I've ever been around. And because we had some pretty complicated issues, and this guy, he sorted them out. And he came out a few times, and then I noticed he had this kid that was coming with him. And the kid was, I don't know, he looked about 7 or 8. I mean, he was maybe older than that, maybe 20. And but he looked really young. And to our grizzled old pipe fitter guy, this young kid had become an apprentice. And he was just like, you know, the plumber says, go out and I just need you to go out and I need you to go dig here. And the kid goes out and he does the digging. He goes, I need you to crawl up under here. The kid does the crawling, right? I mean, he is just going wherever the plumber tells him to. But that's how he learned to be. And now he is a great plumber because he trained from a great plumber, right? So most Christians, we don't think about our apprenticeship, our discipleship in those sort of terms. We just spend most of our time like the contestants on The Apprentice trying to just make sure we make the final cut. Like we can just, if I can just make it to the end of the season, whatever that season might be. So we tend to struggle with things like confidence and assurance of salvation. I hope I don't get cut this week. I wasn't very good. I sinned some this week. I wasn't as smart as I should have been. I wasn't as sharp as I should have been. And it becomes almost like an obsession, especially, and I can't speak to other faith traditions, but I know within Churches of Christ, I at least really wrestled with this idea that I might be going to heaven this week and not going next week, but I could turn things around and go the following week, right? Waffling back and forth, saved, not saved, good, not good, disciple, not disciple. That was the way I thought about it. It becomes an obsession, worrying that we've sinned too much or we're not good enough, and it all, that's what how good I was determined whether I was really a disciple, really where I was going. And it becomes so overwhelming that it becomes so time-consuming and effort and motivate. Everything goes into not getting cut that I don't actually spend any time being a disciple. Does that make sense?
so busy trying to not get kicked off, not get fired, not get cut this week, that I don't spend any time actually learning how to be a disciple. The sad testimony of modern Christianity is that we can be a Christian without ever being a disciple. And we don't talk about that very often, but we can spend so much time trying to be a Christian that we never are actually a follower of Jesus. In the New Testament, though, this word disciple, it always implies a personal attachment. It always does that. Something that shapes someone's, your whole life. Now, this is where discipleship and apprenticeship are really different, right? Apprenticeship is about learning a craft or a trade, about learning one thing, how to be a plumber or an electrician, or how to run a business, or how to practice medicine, right? You don't go to be an apprentice under a plumber so you can learn how to be a father. You don't go to an apprentice with a business leader so that you can learn how to be a community member. That's not what you're learning. You're just learning how to do the thing that they are teaching you to do. But for New Testament disciples, it was not about one thing. It wasn't just about learning morality, which is the way we may communicate that, or learning doctrine, or interpreting the law, interpreting the Torah. It was about those things. It was about all those things. But it was about how to be a good husband and father and mother and wife and community member and teacher and leader and child of God, and how to live this life and pass this life along to other people, right? In fact, in the New Testament, there are zero instances where the word disciple is used without this implication that it is supremely personal union. Every time the word disciple is used, it's always about this union with Christ. It's always personal. It's always attached. And it is always all-encompassing. It's never a one-time thing. Now, they used this word. There was a similar word that was used in Greek society. So if you wanted to learn from a philosopher, you could go be a disciple there, but you weren't learning everything from them. This was really different. Jesus' discipleship was different than everybody else's discipleship. It was different than Greek philosophers. It was different than even other Jewish rabbis. The way Jesus did discipleship was radically different. And so, for instance, in Jesus' time, if there was a rabbi or a teacher or a philosopher, somebody that you wanted to be a student of, someone you want to be a disciple of, what you would do is you would go to them and you would say, hey, I really have been studying what you've been saying, and I'm really, to use a quote term the kids use, I'm really digging it. I'm really like what you're saying, and so I think I want to be a part of your group. And then the teacher or the rabbi would study you and say, well, you know, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And you've been following me around for some time. What have I said about this? Or what have I said about that? And really grill you. And if you pass the test, if they really liked you, they say, all right, you can come be my disciple. Now you can be my disciple. But that was not like Jesus' discipleship at all. Because in Jesus, unlike everybody else, where it's student-driven, like you've got to go and ask and beg, but discipleship with Jesus was the goer. They didn't come to him. Jesus went to them, right? So Jesus walks down to the seashore, and he sees Peter and Andrew and James and John. Peter and Andrew and James and John don't go to the city where Jesus is teaching and like, hey, can we be your disciples? No, Jesus goes to where they're working, where they're mending nets, says, hey, come follow me. Or the example of Matthew, the tax collector. As Jesus went on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth, and he said, follow me. And Matthew got up and followed him. Right? Jesus goes to a tax collector booth to find the guy and call him. We often use the expression, come to Jesus. You know, have you ever used that? The expression, come to Jesus. So we'll see someone maybe living a really ungodly lifestyle, and we'll say, whew, that guy needs to come to Jesus, or that lady needs to come to Jesus. Or if you've got a confrontation with someone where they've said or done something really wrong, maybe in your workplace or maybe towards you, and you say, well, we got to have a come to Jesus meeting about this. I like using that. I have come to Jesus meetings on my bus pretty regularly. Yeah, we use that phrase, come to Jesus, but the truth is that we are far worse than a come to Jesus. And the truth is also that Jesus is far better than we think. Because the disciples never go to Jesus first. He always goes to them, and he calls to them first. And the them that he goes to, unlike every other rabbi, right? Every other rabbi is cherry picking. They're doing the best and the brightest, the smartest, the most dedicated, those who have really got things together, or maybe even those who could sponsor them and help provide a means of living. But that's not what Jesus does. Jesus is not cherry picking the most righteous followers. No, Jesus' followers, they're a motley crew of fishermen and tax collectors and, you know, even rebels against the Roman government. Paul was a murderer of Christians. The people Jesus calls are not the right people. Jesus broke through the barriers that were separating the clean and the unclean, the sinful and the obedient. And Jesus says, y'all can have the obedient, I'll take the sinful. Y'all can have the clean, I'll take the unclean. Jesus calls the disciples who do not have the necessary qualifications. He's putting them in a grad program when they've never finished high school. And yet, he still calls them. One other major difference was that when other rabbis had students, what the students would do, they would go to the rabbi and they would study and they would study and they would study, and they were like, if I study really hard and if I get really good at this, maybe one day I can be a rabbi, right? If I get all this stuff down and I've learned what he says really good, then after he dies or he retires, he goes on, maybe I'll be the rabbi. I can be the teacher. And that is never the case with Jesus' disciples. Jesus never says, one day you're going to be me. Jesus' disciples always remain disciples. They never became the master. Matthew chapter 10, verse 24 and 25, Jesus says, the student is not above the teacher, nor a servant above his master. It is enough for the students to be like their teachers, for the servants to be like their masters. In fact, later on in Matthew, he tells them specifically, don't ever let anybody call you rabbi, because you're never going to be the rabbi. You're never going to be the master. You're never going to be the teacher. You're always going to be my students. You're always going to be my disciples. Now, it's been said that an apprentice learns what his teacher knows, but a disciple becomes what his master is. But the thing is, we are all apprentices in a craft that we will never become masters in, right? And if you're anything like me, that can be really discouraging. I mean, really disheartening. Because I try and I try and I try to be like Jesus, and I mess up and I mess up and I mess up. I fall short, I fall, fail. And so it gets to the point you just want to give up and just throw your hands up and they're like, whatever happens, happens. But because I know I'm not going to get this down. Whenever my son was going into middle school, he wanted to do the band. And this was in Nashville, and their school did this really amazing thing. They brought in all these different kinds of instruments and instructors for those instruments. And they had this one night where, like, all the kids who want to come out for the band, come out with your parents, and then you're going to try out all these different instruments. So you would stand in a line and get up to the flute instructor, and she would have a flute. And then she was like, okay, try this. And you would blow, and you blow, and you try that. And then you'd go over to the drums or the saxophone or the baritone or the trumpet or whatever, oboe or what. I mean, they had a whole bunch of different instruments that you could try and play. And it would turn out that you were like better suited for some instruments than others. I mean, some kids, like the shape of their mouth was better suited for a flute than, say, for a saxophone or for a baritone versus a trumpet. I mean, if your mouth is this shape, you know, you may fit this. Or some kids, you know, had a better sense of natural timing, and some kids had a better inclination towards some things than other. And when that happened, you would pick it up. You were like, oh, well, I can do this. And so you got to pick from the instruments you were kind of more given for. And what happened was that sometimes the instrument you really wanted to play, that was not your best fit. You know, maybe you really wanted to play the drums because all the cool kids play the drums, don't they, Rich? All the cool kids play the drums. but you couldn't, you know, you've got no sense of rhythm or timing. Or maybe you really wanted to play the trumpet, but like me, you've got like a big old mouth and it just doesn't work for the trumpet very well. So sometimes what you wanted to do, you weren't really fit to do. And sometimes I get the feeling like that with my discipleship, like I really want to be a disciple of Jesus, but maybe I'm not a good fit because I'm so bad at this. I have picked up an instrument that I cannot play. But the amazing thing about Jesus is he knows that going in. He knows not only are you bad at it, he knows that she's bad at it. And he's bad at it. And she's bad at it. He knows that we're all bad at it. And yet he calls us anyway. The important thing is not that when you become a disciple, you get everything down pat, all the morality, all the doctrine, all the teaching, that you understand that all completely and you have it all down and that you're going to live a perfect life. The important thing isn't that you get everything down pat. The important thing is that you keep trying when you don't, because you are not. You may think you're not a gifted disciple of Jesus, and I'm going to tell you that's just because you're not a gifted disciple of Jesus. And I'm not either. Our elders are not gifted disciples. They're just people who keep trying when they're not. The world only needs one Jesus. But it needs lots and lots of imitators. Even imperfect imitators like me and you. Discipleship isn't the process of, or is not the product of getting everything right. Discipleship is the process of doing what Jesus would do if he were you. And sometimes you're going to understand that and you're going to be like, oh, I know exactly what Jesus would do right here, and you're going to do it and pull it off perfectly. That is a special, special day when it happens, by the way. Most often you're going to be wondering, I wonder what Jesus would do, and I'm going to try to do what I think Jesus would do, and sometimes I'm going to get that right, and sometimes I'm going to get it wrong. Sometimes I may know what he's going to do, but I do it the wrong way. And sometimes I don't even have any idea. Just, God, I'm sending up a prayer here. Just help me. Just help me, because I don't know what Jesus would do, and I don't know how Jesus would do it, but I'm trying. I'm trying. The important thing for you and I this morning, it's not that we leave here and we go out and that we're all the perfect picture image of Jesus. The world needs flawed little Jesuses. And that sounds so bad. But they know that they're flawed too. And if they can see flawed people trying to follow Jesus, maybe they can follow Jesus too. So my encouragement to you, for my prayer for you this week, a prayer for us as a congregation, is that we will go out as disciples of Jesus, broken and skewed that we are, that the world might see the perfect Christ. May God bless you in your efforts this week. And if we can pray for you for encouragement, for strength, for forgiveness, for healing, we want to do that this week. And if you are ready to become a follower of Christ, a disciple of Christ, a child of God, we want to help you with that this morning as well. Won't you come as we stand and as we sing?